on DAB Digital Radio, digital TV, downloads and online.
This is Five Live.
Mark Coburn's on his holidays. Andrew Collins, an estimable replacement for this week. But what movies are we going to talk about later on, Andrew?
We will be talking about The Ugly Truth, G.I. Joe, Marine, which is a French film, Adam, Orphan, Yes Men Fix the World, and Mega Shark versus Giant Octopus, if we have time.
Yes, all right then. If Jeff Boycott's coming, we might not, but no. we'll get through what we can. Let's start off with the UK box office top 10. At number 10, Love, Arj, Carl. Is that right?
I believe that is the correct pronunciation, but if it's wrong, I dare say somebody will tell us. This is a Bollywood movie, and it is a love story set now in London and in the 1960s in Delhi. So it's a love story with a temporal shift. And I think it's a really successful debut for a Bollywood movie on our UK charts. Biggest one of the year so far.
Is it? Right, OK.
Yes.
At 9, Coco before Chanel, which is Audrey Tautou, isn't
Audrey
it?
Audrey Tautou playing Coco Chanel, who was, we find out in this film, was named Coco Chanel because she used to be a little singer before she was a seamstress, and sang a song about Coco, a dog, and that's how why they called her Coco, which is a funny... So she's named after a dog, basically, in this tasteful French film, which explains her life story up to the point where she became famous. So it's
had indifferent reviews, hasn't it?
Yeah, I found it slightly dull, certainly pretty to look at, and Audrey Tautou is very good, but it could have done with a bit more excitement, a bit more spice, maybe a bit more fashion.
Right, yeah.
I don't normally say that about a film.
No. But you are a fashion icon yourself.
Yes, that's true. Yes, I do. I have a very good walk.
At 8, The Hangover.
Oh, everyone loves The Hangover. It's one of these films that hasn't really got anyone famous in it. It's an American comedy about a group of grown men who wake up with various lack of memory about what happened on a stag weekend. One of them's lost his tooth. Another one's, there's a tiger in the bathroom. It's one of these kind of films that unfolds. I think men seem to like it. I've heard people say they've seen it and thought, wow, it wasn't as good as the posters made it seem. Because it's got a million 4-star and 5-star reviews just stamped all over the advertising. So you'll have to find out for yourself. If anyone's seen it, I'd like to know if they thought it was as good as the reviews say.
All right, another half-hearted appeal there, but nothing doing at this end. At number 7, Bruno.
Bruno, which is Sacha Baron Cohen's latest character going around trying to prove that Americans are stupid and homophobic. It's different to Borat. I think Borat was a work of genius. I don't know if you agree.
Well, I don't know. I've never quite got over the feelings of such extreme discomfort watching that, and that the people were quite often such easy targets that I could never say that I've actually enjoyed that film. I haven't seen this one.
Well, this one is odd, because you're not absolutely sure how much of it is real and how much of it is staged, because Sacha Baron Cohen now is quite well known, you know, no matter that he's disguised as Bruno, the Austrian fashionista. But nevertheless, I liked some parts of it, but it didn't make me laugh very much, which is an odd thing. I gasped occasionally.
Yeah. At number 6, Land of the Lost.
Land of the Lost, this is new in. It's based on a 1970s kids' TV show about a scientist who goes to a dinosaur land. I don't know, I mean, I think it may have been shown here, but it's not as big for us as it is for the Americans, and indeed for people of the age of Will Ferrell and the director Brad Silberling, who obviously remember it very fondly from their childhood and have thus made a great big fat CGI movie of it, which often happens in Hollywood. It's got funny moments in it, but it's very, very much... Is it for the kids? Is it for the adults? I mean, the adults remember the original, the kids won't. The kids won't get the drug jokes in it. It's a bit half and half.
OK. Number 5, Ice Age, Dawn of the Dinosaurs.
Much safer bet if you like dinosaurs. This is the third part of the Ice Age franchise, where the characters basically find the dinosaurs didn't become extinct. They're just under the ice in a world of their own. It's very nicely done. It's a lot like a computer game. There's a bit where there's a pterodactyl chase where you are literally on the back of the pterodactyl, and it may as well be a video game. But that's not necessarily a bad thing, and I thought it was very charming.
So there are still legs in the Ice Age franchise.
I think so. I don't know where they'll go for 4, but because this one's got a lot of animals having babies, which usually means they've run out of things to do.
Right, OK. For The Proposal.
Yeah, this is one of those films. It's a romantic comedy, better than the one we're going to be talking about today, which is called The Ugly Truth. The Proposal stars Sandra Bullock, and it makes people go, oh, I really like Sandra Bullock. I wish she'd make better films. And I sort of feel the same way. I really like her as well. I wish she'd make better films.
Yeah. 3, The Taking of Pelham. 1, 2, 3.
That was last week's big film. It's a remake of a 1974 subway hijack thriller, which I think people of a certain age, i.e. me, remember maybe too fondly. It's actually showing on television in a couple of weeks, I think maybe even next week, on 5, so worth looking out for it, see if it's as good as it felt at the time. This is a big, noisy, Tony Scott-directed version with Denzel Washington as the train dispatcher talking all the time to John Travolta's possibly psychotic hijacker. And it's quite a good two-hander in a lot of ways, but there are big bursts of action which don't seem to really connect with the rest of the film. And the ending's rubbish. I will say. The ending of the original, even though I may be looking through rose-tinted spectacles, was subtle and memorable and interesting and visual. But this one is just big, noisy, running around cars. So they've ruined the ending, is what they've done.
Oh, right. OK, we'll watch out for that. G-Force at number two.
I haven't seen G-Force, but I know what it is. Right. It's a load of guinea pigs. Voiced by famous people like Nicolas Cage and people like that. So, frankly, even though it's obviously aimed at people slightly younger than myself, I quite like to see this. We used to have a guinea pig when I was a kid, so I haven't seen it, but I'm glad it's at number two. I might go and see it.
Right, and number one, Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince.
Yeah, there's no good reason why I haven't yet seen this, because I have enjoyed the other Harry Potter films. I'm amazed that films that long can keep kids sitting still, because that goes against all of the clichés that kids can't sit still. Well, they can when these films come out. I think I was maybe put off by the fact that the Vatican seemed to have given this one the thumbs up, because the Vatican are usually pretty sniffy about Harry Potter, because they think it's about the occult. But they seem to have softened on Harry Potter and given it their first good review to a Harry Potter film for this, so maybe that put me off it.
The Ugly Truth has been the movie that's been everywhere in the papers and everything in the premieres this week.
Yes, if you got knocked down by a bus over the last week, the last thing you would have seen would have been a great giant picture of Catherine Heigl and the other fella. I almost don't want to give him his name. Gerard Butler. I don't like Gerard Butler. He plays the man in this romantic comedy. Catherine Heigl, who we know from Grey's Anatomy and was very good in Knocked Up, the Judd Apatow film. Well, they're the two stars in this, right? The Ugly Truth, it's called that because she's a control thing, right? You know how romantic comedies are. Two people look like they're not going to get off with each other, and then they do. That's pretty much how romantic comedies have to be built. So it's not as I'm not giving anything away by suggesting that these two, even though they look like they don't like each other at the beginning, might possibly find some common ground towards the end. But I think the problem with this, and I hope this comes across in the clip I'm about to play you, is that neither of them are very nice. So you're not exactly rooting for either of them. She's a control freak TV producer, and he is a guy who has a kind of cable show where he basically he plays a kind of sexist, boorish, old-school kind of caveman guy and explains that women really... men are stupid, he says. He says men are stupid, and the only way to attract a man is to basically lose weight and have sex with them when they need it. That's pretty much what he says. And she thinks, oh, what an awful man. And then he gets seconded to the programme that she does, a daytime programme. So let's hear Catherine Heigl and Gerard Butler. He's Scottish, by the way, in real life. See if you can spot he's actually Scottish when he's speaking American. This is them. He's trying to set her up with a doctor. OK, let's listen to the clip.
So tell me, Mike, how did the Ugly Truth start?
Well, Mr. Irish Craig Ferguson, I had a sales job where I was driving around a lot listening to talk radio. I started calling in, and then I realized I'm smarter than everybody else. Just ask my producer, Abby. She thinks I'm a genius on days when she's not sexually frustrated.
Ah, yes. Thousands of lives have been enriched by your wisdom.
Excuse me, lady, but you have a boyfriend right now because of me.
Hey, it may have started because of you, but it's lasted because of me.
Oh, great. So you're acting like your normal control freak psycho self again.
I am not a control freak.
When you checked into the hotel, did you or did you not insist on getting an eastern-facing room on a floor not below 7?
I like rising with the sun and a few.
My point is that Colin likes the Mike version of Abby, not the Abby version of Abby. So don't go knocking my words of wisdom when you're living proof that they work.
So it's hard for some Scottish people to do an American accent. This is what we learned from the film. And this is slightly troublesome because you have to listen to this all the way through the film. Also, you're supposed to, in some way, spot some kind of spark of humanity, of enlightenment in this character. Yeah. But he never really seems to give it, other than that he slightly softens a bit because he sets up Catherine Heigl's character with a doctor who happens to look like a bodybuilder. So it's got this really quite insulting idea that the best man that possibly a woman can get is a gym-toned doctor, which strikes me as very regressive and reductive in itself. And meanwhile, she's got this lumbering caveman idiot who's giving her lots of tips on how to pick up a man based on his own experiences. And you know at some point they're going to get off with each other. You just know. So the whole thing is utterly insulting.
Right, OK. I mean, is it funny? I mean, we've got the rom. Is there any com?
There's a couple of supporting characters who are very good. Cheryl Hines, who you know from being Larry David's wife on Curb Your Enthusiasm. She plays an anchor woman and husband and wife team, a bit Richard and Judy style, except on a news programme, with John Michael Higgins, who's in a lot of Christopher Guest's movies. And they're very good, but they're kind of in it only intermittently. So, you know, they're, when they're on screen, there's some laughs to be had. But most of the time, you're looking at the two people who are on the side of every bus in your... in your town.
I know. They're really pushing it hard.
They are, and I'm sure it'll be in the top ten this time next week. I'm sure it will, because, you know, people will go and see
it. What do other people think of it? I mean, your opinion, of course, is the only one that matters to us, Andrew.
And
I mean, is the general consensus of, you know, of the intelligentsia, that, which, of course, is spearheaded by you, but I mean...
It's spearheaded by middle-aged men who don't seem to like it. Yeah, the middle-aged male critics don't seem to like it that much. It's not aimed at us, really, is it? But, I just think they're not appealing characters, and it's a real shame, because Katherine Heigl was great in Knocked Up and then went on the record to say, actually, in retrospect, she thought it was a bit sexist, which was a weird thing to say about a film that's made you very famous. And also, I don't think it was, or at least not in the way that most of those kind of frat house comedies are. So I think she's exec produced this, so she's obviously very keen on this being her vehicle for her talents, but she needs another one. She needs a better one.
So you look at the pictures on all the buses, and you know what you're going to get, and that is what you're going to get, and you've got to go with low expectations
to avoid
disappointment.
And if you saw the even worse romantic comedy last year, P.S. I Love You, which also starred Gerard Butler, in that case, he wasn't playing a Scot either. He was playing an Irish bloke, just as badly. And if you thought he was charming in that, then maybe you should go and see it. But if you thought he was actually unbearable, like I did, then you would avoid this.
Do the Americans like him a lot? I mean, he must be doing something right if he keeps getting these roles.
He was in 300, where he suits this kind of pumped-up Spartan role that he had in that film, but that didn't involve acting in the traditional sense. It's not that kind of film, whereas these films he's doing now desire quite subtle comic acting. He's got to be the new Cary Grant if you're going to be in one of these films. You've got to be like George Clooney. George Clooney can carry this off, you know, in his sleep. But Gerard Butler, I don't think he's quite got the licks. He also has got a face that you would quite like to just sort of push into some soil. Push him down in the garden and push his face into the soil.
Yes, well, I mean, it sounds a perfectly reasonable course of action.
She never does that.
Perhaps women like looking at it. Perhaps it's a face that doesn't appeal to you.
Yes, it's possible. It's possible. He doesn't have any homoerotic appeal. But again, please prove me wrong if I'm wrong.
All right, should we talk a little bit about Adam?
Adam is interesting because Adam is it's a romantic comedy again, but much more smart. It's a much smarter thing. It's got a message, because
that sounds almost oxymoronic.
Yes,
it?
I know. I feel bad about this, but it's about a guy played by Hugh Dancy, an English actor who does a very good American accent, as you'll hear in a moment. He has Asperger's syndrome, which is very much in the news because of the guy who's being extradited for his part in that hacking into the military computer. I'm sure they did lots of research in this. To make it sort of truthful, but at the same time, it is a sweet romantic comedy. So in a way, some of the rough edges, I think, have had to be shaved off the condition. But nevertheless, better that a positive film is coming out about a condition that may teach us something about it than not, I suppose. He meets the girl upstairs. His dad dies. He's obviously dependent on his dad, who he lives with, and he's left in this world, which he doesn't understand. He's in New York, and this condition obviously makes life very difficult, because you can't understand people who don't speak properly, which is nearly all of us, talking in these ridiculous metaphors and riddles that we do without realising, and he finds it very hard to connect emotionally with people. Well, of course, he does connect emotionally with the woman upstairs, played by Rose Byrne. And in case you don't know enough about the syndrome, they explain it very helpfully for you in this clip.
Sometimes it's hard for me to... I have this thing that makes it hard to it's called Asperger's syndrome.
Oh.
One thing about it is not knowing what people are thinking. Like, right now.
Oh, right. I guess I was wondering what that feels like for you.
Well, it doesn't feel like anything. It just is.
Okay.
My brain works differently from NTs.
NTs?
Neurotypicals. Sometimes I can't understand them, especially when they mean something different from what they're actually saying.
You don't do that?
Most Aspies are really honest. Psychologists think it's a lack of imagination, but psychologists are mostly NTs. Albert Einstein, Thomas Jefferson, Mozart, they all had lots of imagination.
They had Asperger's?
Probably. When I was younger, I would have just thought you were sexually excited because I was. That's called mind blindness. I had to learn to ask what other people are thinking.
I understand. It's okay. I really should go.
Can I see you again?
I'm right upstairs, so...
Great, okay. I'll see you.
So it means well, this film, but there are moments in it where you just feel it's a little bit too saccharine. You know, it's dealing with a reasonably serious subject, after all, but yeah. In order to make it romantic and make it comedic, it can't go too far. There's also a quite clunky subplot involving Rose Byrne's character's dad being indicted for a corporate crime that he's apparently committed. And I just found that slightly distracting. I don't know why they spent so much time on that. But it's not in any way a bad film, and it comes with one of those laurels on the poster saying that it won a prize at the Sundance Film Festival, which makes me wonder how many prizes they give out at the Sundance Film Festival.
Well, that's the thing, really, isn't it?
Yeah. They seem to give it to any film.
And does it tell you for what? I mean, it might be for best editing, might it?
Yes, it might be a dread thing, the audience award, which seems to be, you know, at a film festival. You don't ask the audience, do you? I wouldn't, anyway. So it's, well, because you can't trust audiences to go to film festivals. It's not normal. So I think that this film is not quite as good as it wants to be. I suppose it's pitching itself somewhere at a kind of Woody Allen film with a message, but it's not quite up to Woody Allen's... Well, it's better than Woody Allen's worst, shall we say.
Right, OK. Well, I think that's what's known as damning with faint praise.
Yes, I know, but all praise to Hugh Dancy, because I think he's a very charismatic actor and he's doing really well with that American accent. You don't think for a second that he's not American. I didn't, anyway, so it's not distracting, and it can be, can't it?
Right, but if given the choice of Adam or The Ugly Truth, it's a pretty clear-cut choice.
Yeah, without a doubt. Of the two romantic comedies, that's your romantic comedy for the week. And if you want something noisy, then G.I. Joe will provide all the noise you could possibly want in 2 hours.
Right, good afternoon. This is Mark Ratliff at a cacophonous Headingley. Andrew Collins is doing the films. Andrew, as an old friend, if I sound like I'm not terribly engaged with what you're saying, it's not because I'm not trying to hang on your every word. It's just that I've got Ness and Dorma and PA announcements and all kinds of people. I mean, you just wouldn't believe it. So I'm struggling to hear you half the time, although you know, I'm reassured by people in the know that you're doing a sterling job. Also, Mark Crilley and Alan Martin have been on and saying hello to you, and they're asking when Absolute Heroes are doing a reunion gig. Was that your band?
Well, that's funny, because one of them was the manager of our band, yeah, in the sixth form in the early 80s in Northampton. Yes, so no, we won't be reforming. I don't think there's a great deal of money on the table for that band, actually.
Right, OK. G.I. Joe, then.
G.I. Joe, The Rise of Cobra. Let's give it its full title, because G.I. Joe would very much like to be a long-running franchise. It's the second film in recent months to be made in conjunction with the toy manufacturer Hasbro, because it's based on the G.I. Joe action figures, which used to be Action Man, the Action Man that we know. And then I think in 83 it became sort of slightly smaller and then became a kind of group of mercenaries, because, you know, toy soldiers had to stop being soldiers, didn't they, sometime? I think it was something to do with the Vietnam War or something like that. Anyway, so they stopped being soldiers and started to be an elite mercenary fighting force, which is what they are now in this film. It's directed by Stephen Sommers, who in the production notes, which is unfair to quote from, but I'm going to anyway, it says he's an explosive and visionary director who helmed such global blockbusters as The Mummy and The Mummy Returns. So you can see he's got a broad palette of yes. Tricks up his sleeve. So this one is very much in the same vein as those, really. There's a lot of CGI, an awful lot of noise, a massive amount of action, and I'm going to now, you'll think I'm obsessed with actors and how bad they are at other accents, but Christopher Eccleston, who I think you'll agree is a fine English actor.
Well, Joe, the film student, has emailed me. He got an advanced screening of G.I. Joe yesterday, and he said Christopher Eccleston's the best thing in it.
Well, he's a lovely presence. It's great to see Christopher Eccleston playing the baddie in a film. It's brilliant to see. But, well, I will play you this clip where he explains why he wants to take over the world and ruin everything, and you can see if you think he's any good at a Scottish accent.
This belonged to an ancestor of mine. He was caught selling arms to both sides. The French forced him to wear it for the rest of his life. They called him Destro, destroyer of nations.
So why do you keep it?
So that I never forget the most important rule in dealing arms.
Let me guess, never sell to both sides?
Never get caught selling to both sides. Take the warheads to Paris, have them weaponized. Then I want you to test one.
Test one?
Well, let CNN show the world how well they perform.
Fear is a great motivator.
I have a target in mind, one the French will never forget.
I wonder what that will be.
Well, yes. I mean, just on the accent there, I mean, it sounds pretty ropey to me. And you and I are English, but Robin, who works on the programme here, is Scottish. And he can, in fact, confirm, our Scottish correspondent, that that is rotten.
I didn't think it was good. And I really love Eccleston. You know, he was a great Doctor Who as well and done some brilliant stuff. So it's a shame. But nevertheless, there's also an amusing bit later on where one of our heroes has to fly a brand new prototype of a plane, which this guy Eccleston and his arms company have devised. And he's up there trying to shoot down a missile. This is not giving anything away, and he can't find the controls, and it turns out that his voice activated, and he starts shouting out things like fire and arm, and nothing happens. And the woman who's back at the controls, she says, of course, he's Scottish, it's probably the word fire in Gaelic, which she then finds out and tells him what it is, and he has to shout out the word fire in Gaelic. And it's just, why did they make him Scottish in the first place? They have to make these ridiculous excuses up about it. Anyway,
probably Gaelic, is it?
Yes, it may well be Gaelic, but either way, I'm just saying what they said. I think they say he must have said it in Scottish, actually. I believe that's the phrase they use. So,
okay, just in case anybody could be confused about what Gaelic or Gaelic
might be. Yes, exactly. He said it in Scottish. So it's I thought it was actually brainless and insulting, and I wanted to tear my own head off while watching it. But I know a lot of people who are very, very intelligent and have been to see this film and enjoyed it exactly for what it was. So I don't want to be too hasty. I personally was not in the mood for this on the day.
And I mean, is it one for people who sort of, you know, people with a love of Team America and Gerry Anderson and all those kind of things?
Yeah, it's so modern, though. You know, they have these suits which have been devised so that they can kind of run faster than any man because they've got this suit on. So they're not real superheroes, they're just tough guys. And they've got these suits on and they run through Paris, knocking cars over as they go. And it's just, I thought it was really clumsy. I mean, it's cleverly done, technically very cleverly done, but I just thought it's not a nice thing to watch. Two men in great big fat suits knocking cars over as they try and stop the Eiffel Tower being blown up by some nanotechnology. I just found the whole thing lacking in grace. Others, I think, have seen it as a potential camp classic. So we'll keep that in the top drawer, just in case I'm wrong and they're right.
All right, Andrew. Well, it's been good talking to you, and I'm not sure you've given us anything that we'd really feel like going out to see there. But,
yeah, go and see Meyrine. Meyrine is your film this week. That's the one.
Is it?
French gangster movie, part one of.
All right. All right. Thanks very much, Andrew. Lovely talking to you.
Thanks for downloading from the BBC. To find other downloads or more information, go online.
bbc.co.uk/5live.